So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I am Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe, and joining me as guest co-host this week is, once again, Senior Writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam, how's it going?
Hey, how you surviving the second week of the Samsung avalanche?
I am but a zombie, and this is my demonized voice talking to you right now. Thanks for making the time to help us out with the podcast this week. I think everyone is not going to be surprised. This week, we're going to talk all about our Samsung product reviews. We have been spending a bunch of time with the Galaxy Z Flip 4, Z Fold 4, Watch 5, and Watch 5 Pro. We also have a special guest on this episode to help us walk through some of that stuff. Personal tech reporter at Washington Post, no affiliation with Engadget whatsoever, Mr. Chris Velasco himself. We'll be talking to him shortly. Later on in the episode, we'll also be covering some other news this week from Apple and Nintendo, and some other kind of interesting developments in Airbnb, so stay tuned for that. As always, if you're enjoying the show, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher and leave us a review on iTunes so people can discover us. We also live stream the recording of this podcast every Thursday morning at about 10 a.m. Eastern on the Engadget YouTube channel, where we can interact live and have Q&A sessions with the audience members. So if you have anything you want to ask us, hop on over. It's usually a fun time. So this week, Sam and I have just been spending the last week or so really digging into the Galaxy Z Flip 4, Fold 4, and the Watches 5, and we've been talking with all our friends about these things, including persona non grata, a personal tech reporter at Washington Post, Chris Velasco. Hey, V.
Hey, I'm back, and if I'm persona non grata, why do you keep asking me to be on the show?
Do I keep asking you? I feel like I do it because I know the people want it. You know what I mean?
Look, I wake up early to hang out with y'all. Like, this is good for me, to be clear, but it also takes a little bit of work. So hi, I'm back.
Yeah. We appreciate you joining us. I am curious, V, do you have the Samsung devices? Have you been spending any actual time with them at all?
What about, so I'm wearing the Watch 5. I've got the old Z Flip 4, and then the Fold is here somewhere. And that's like it's what I've been meaning for the last, since I got it, essentially. But yeah, I've been putting in some time. Maybe not as much as I would have been in the old days, but still kind of taking my time to get a feel for it all.
I love that in the old days, meaning like when you had Sam's current job.
When, right? I had Sam's job, and Sam could probably attest to this, like, there are just long periods of time where all you do is like touch a phone and take pictures of a phone and go to sleep thinking of a phone and wake up 4 hours later having to work on a phone. So, you know, it's a lot sometimes, especially this time of year when things are starting to ramp up again. So we're all just trying to get by, y'all.
So, I mean, Sam, starting with you, has it been more fun to review like a Fold 4 as opposed to like a regular phone?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, like, you know, kind of like I'm in a similar position as V, where like, you know, my daily driver for the last year was a Z Fold 3. So I feel like I could not be more prepared to review the, you know, the fourth edition of this phone. And at the same time, it's like, you know, I'm trying to like dive in and find all the nitty gritty differences. And there aren't a ton, but there are some that are important to talk about. And it's weird because I think, you know, for a long time, Galaxy Fold users, you know, there are some things that like you pick up on that the average person might not. But at the same time, it's also important because for anyone who's thinking about diving in with their first foldable phone, especially the big one that we're using, it feels like, you know, finally it reaches a good place where it's like, oh, they've thought of not everything, but they've thought of all the most important stuff. And so it kind of feels like a new launching place for like the Z Fold family.
I want to give you a little bit of a history, like, story here, Sam, because when, you know, V's whole thing, at least when he was at Engadget, I don't know if he's changed anymore now, is that, like, you give him something just a little bit novel, like a bit of a novelty or whatever, and V would just run out and throw money at it until he gets it. Like, that's what he does. And that's what he does at, like, that's what he did with the original Fold, I want to say, or the Fold 2.
It was the Z Fold 2. Sam and I bought the same phone, so you can't hate on me for buying this thing without also hating on your much closer and nicer friend.
The shade on all levels is just uncontrollable.
I didn't know you bought a Z Fold 2, Sam. I thought you bought a 3.
No, like, I've bought the last two. I tried to buy the original Z Fold, and that was such a nightmare because all the unlocked ones, the inventory for the original Fold was, like, incredibly small. And then I tried to buy an unlocked one. Those were sold out. And then I tried to buy a locked one to AT&T, but they said back at the time their policy was it would take at minimum 3 months to unlock it so I could use it on my carrier because I'm not an AT&T subscriber. And I was like, okay, well, by that point, like, the new one will be, like, 3 to 6 months away, and it just didn't make sense.
So the reason I bring up V's history, well, in part because, you know, V doesn't just do that with Folds. But anyway, Sam, like, the reason I tease Sam less about it is because, like, Sam doesn't do this all the time with everything, and V does this with almost everything. Yeah, there you go. And, but the reason I brought it up is because, like, way back in the day when it was, like, the Z Fold, the original one, or the Z Fold 2, I would have laughed at people for buying the original ones. Whereas now, I feel like we're at a point where, no, I think people should, like, you know, feel comfortable buying these things, right? Am I right? Like, V, do you think your money would have been better spent on a Fold 4?
So I want to be absolutely clear. I bought into the hype, as I so often do, and I feel like that's... I'm going to defend that practice for just a second, because I think it is important for us. Like, we get stuff for free. We get to test it. We send it back. Like, there is a never-ending flow of products just coming into and exiting our lives to the point where it can be, like, a little hard to keep track of it all. So I felt like it was important in that moment to buy a Z Fold 2, because it kind of felt like the first time a foldable was close to ready for the mainstream, especially that sort of, like, tablet phone hybrid style. So rather than trying it out for a week and sending it back to Samsung and, like, promising not to drop it and test the durability and stuff, I think a lot of us thought it was important to just, like, buy one and live with it and just, like, really see, really put Samsung's claims to the test. And I don't regret buying that phone at all. That said, now that we're here 2 years later and the Z Fold 4 has gotten to the point where Samsung is just like, okay, we're good with the big stuff. Let's just focus on the nips and the tucks and the polish. Let's just get all of the little things right now. Yeah, this is definitely the first time I would recommend a regular person consider buying one of these things. And it's probably not going to be the Fold, because I don't know that I ever want to spend $1,800 on a phone again. But, you know, Z Fold 4 has been really interesting too. You know, there's been a lot of change, and it feels almost practical, which is kind of a weird thing to say.
Yeah, totally. Like, I feel like if you bought the Z Fold, the original Fold or the Fold 2, you were kind of like a tech weirdo. And then if you bought the Z Fold 3, you were, like, kind of like a power user. You're like, you know, you like, you know, talking about the bleeding edge of technology, and that's fine. But, like, now you can sort of be, like, a normal person and buy a foldable phone, and it doesn't seem weird, I guess. Also, really funny anecdote. So my neighbors below me had a leak in their ceiling. And so we had a plumber come by to check out, make sure the leak's not coming from our place. And the plumber had a Z Fold 3. And I was shocked. I was blown away. I did not expect him to have, like, a Z Fold 3. And he's like, oh, I love it. It's surprisingly durable. And, like, you know, he had, like, these giant plumber hands. And it's like the screen, like, the huge screen makes it easier for me to, like, navigate and touch on, like, small stuff. And he was just like, I've already pre-ordered the next one. I'm like, dude, like, that's awesome. Like, I'm always on the lookout for, like, seeing weird tech in the wild. And this was only the second time I've actually seen just, like, a normal person, like, who's not in tech media, have a Fold phone. I was like, oh, that's really cool.
When you brought up that point about you don't think anyone should spend $1,800 on a phone, V, my thought was, and I want to use this as a way to get deeper into our review observations, right? Like, my thought was, like, do you really consider this a phone only? Like, would it be more reasonable, would that price be more reasonable if you thought of this as both a phone and a tablet?
Yeah, and I think that's the way a lot of people do think about it, with a little provocation from Samsung. Like, that's clearly the idea here. But for me, like, the way I think about my like screen needs is that I need a phone for sure. I need a laptop for sure. Something in between is nice, but I'd probably want the size closer towards the laptop end of that spectrum for it to be, because I spend a lot of time, like, you know, who doesn't lay on the couch, like, watching movies from time to time, or like digging into a book. And I, as much as I love, like, the Z Fold series has been it was, I should say, the best e-reader to use on the subway, because you've got the full size you need it. But then if you're, you know, if the people finally just, like, your bench is, like, full all of a sudden, as always seems to happen, you just sort of close it a little bit, or you're like, you just kind of fold it, and you have, like, a little more room to do your thing without, like, feeling like you're man spreading with a phone, you know? So I think it's valuable, but I do think that if Samsung was to make a slightly bigger version of the Fold, or I forget exactly which company does this, because I don't get all of the phones anymore.
Right.
But there
right.
are companies that have the sort of, when it's folded, it's a little wider, so it feels a bit more phone-like. And when you open it up, it obviously, like, the aspect ratio is a little bit different. If Samsung went with something like that, I think that might be a little more useful. But as it stands, it's fine. I just don't think of the unfolded form of a Z Fold as really what I need out of a tablet. And I think that's probably true for quite a few people as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, I'm like, we were talking about this earlier, but, like, I'm kind of, like, in the idea of, like, I want to simplify the devices that I use. And I'm kind of at a point where I don't want to own just a tablet. Like, a standalone tablet is just, like, one thing that I don't want to have to think about managing, keeping charged, all of that. And so while the Z Fold series, like, it's not quite a full tablet, especially because it's, like, definitely not as big as, like, an iPad Pro or whatever, it does just enough of the tablet stuff, like e-reader or, like, reading comics or just stuff like that, where it's, like, that's all I need it for, and it's, like, having the flexibility to have a slightly bigger screen when I want that bigger screen, and I don't have to carry on a separate device, that to me is, like, the real appeal of a Z Fold.
So I guess my question to you, and this sort of Sam, is do you like the Z Fold 4 now that you've got almost a full week with it?
Yeah. I mean, I liked the last one. I liked this one, too. And they've made a handful of, like, smart changes. I really appreciate that there's a longer telephoto camera. I love telephoto camera or lenses on, you know, standard cameras and especially phones. And also, I was kind of surprised the addition of the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 chip. I don't notice a huge improvement in performance, but I think the increased energy efficiency has really delivered a longer battery life that I was kind of missing a little bit on the previous one. And so I think that's really nice. The improved UDC is kind of whatever. It is a little bit more camouflaged, but it's definitely not a reason to buy the phone. And so there are a handful of, like, nice to have upgrades. But I will say, if you are a Z Fold 3 owner and your phone is in good shape, don't feel pressure to upgrade. This, like, the real people is for people who don't have any foldables at all in their life and they want a big kind of multitasking, multi-purpose power user phone. It's, you know, it's, yes, it's expensive, but, like, now's an okay time to jump in.
V, do you agree?
I do, but Sam, I want to pivot back to you real quick. We're talking about sort of the little changes that have come in the Z Fold. Do you enjoy using the little toolbar thing that now sits at the bottom of your screen?
Oh, the taskbar thing?
The taskbar, sure. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
I think I like it, and I think it makes me want to use the multitasking features a little bit more, because the taskbar that was on the right side of the phone, like, I went back and forth with, like, for a while, I pinned it to the side of the screen and was like, so you had a taskbar on the right, and then you had your, like, standard Android, you know, your home apps on the bottom. And that just felt a little too cluttered to me. And then so I turned it off. And then as soon as I turned it off, I never used that taskbar again. And so having that taskbar there where it dynamically changes between your standard, you know, Android apps on your main screen, and then you get that little taskbar on the bottom, I think it encourages me to use the multitasking features more, which I think is important for a phone like this.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And we're talking for, so Samsung devices, as a lot of people know, have like a little
edge panel.
The edge panel. Yes, thank you. I forgot exactly what you're Samsung's welcome. Marketing speak was for it. The edge panel, where you tap it and like this little palette of apps slides out from the side, and you can just sort of quickly access your shortcuts or your like app pairs if you wanted to run two side by side. And that was by far the thing that I would fat hand the most. Like my hand meat would yep. inevitably touch it. So I developed a really sort of intense and possibly irrational hatred for this thing. So that was gone the moment I figured out that my hands are just not compatible with it. So yeah, I agree having the taskbar down at the bottom that sort of persists as you do other things. It takes a little getting used to sort of visually because you're sort of I'm used to leaving everything else behind when I'm doing something on the internal screen of the Fold. So having what amounts to like your bottom row of apps from your home screen, just kind of with you when you need it is sort of nice. I don't know that everyone's going to get a ton of use out of it, but especially if you're just like classic Android, right? If you're used to doing a swipe up and hold and just like whizzing through to do your recent apps.
For sure.
Like, It sort of replicates some behaviors that already exist. So it's nice. I admit to not finding it quite as helpful as I would have hoped, especially because I got the impression Samsung was trying to play up some of these little quality of life improvements. And I, as far as this one goes, I'm not sure I'm sold on it.
Yeah, I do agree with you. And then I find that like making app pairs is a little bit more annoying now than it used to be.
Which, to be clear, was always bad. Like, it was never an easy, sort of sophisticated thing to do.
Yeah, and there's definitely a challenge for Samsung in that, like, they're trying to create, like, a new, like, gesture language for creating these things. And no one has really figured it out yet. And so there's always a little bit of awkwardness because they just haven't perfected it yet.
I think we can talk, you know, even more like at length about the Z Fold 4 and how we feel or how you two feel specifically about the Z Fold 4. But I do want to like weave in, I think, my own experience with the Flip as well as yours, I think, V, because I think that is the best way to kind of talk about these two devices or the Flip, right? Because I personally feel like the Flip phone is the Z Flip 4 is the phone or the foldable that everyone should be introduced to as their first like foldable. I think it's great. I have loved like my time with it. A little bit of behind the scenes of like review testing stories, but like with a Z Flip 4, I feel more equipped to become a TikTok star because I can use the freaking.
You were just saying how you felt too old for TikTok.
I know. Look. Maybe I am too old for TikTok, but with the Z Flip 4.
What is happening here?
Okay. Well, in testing this Z Flip, the Z Flip 4 has given me plenty of excuse to just nonstop take a lot of random videos all over the place because it's so easy to just prop up on its own, whether it's closed or open in like that like flex mode thing. And then just using even though the cover display is completely useless as like a viewfinder, it's still somewhat like 1% helpful in making sure you're kind of in the scene. And then the way it's shaped, right? Like the edges of it are pretty flat. So if you want to like lay it sort of on a surface with its cameras facing out, you can. Or if you want to like prop it up for sure, if you want to like have it half open and like in the perpendicular, like a right angle and set it up, you can also use that. But word of caution, when you record any content like pictures or video with the phone set up in that way, the pictures come out upside down. There's no accelerometer to be like, oh, you're using the external cameras, but you are also like setting it up technically upside down. We won't flip the picture over for you. Go into our photo editor and flip it twice yourself. So anyway, that's just me enjoying the process of like using and testing the Flip 4. I will say one thing I thought I was going to like, and I want to hear what you guys think about this experience on the Fold. I thought I was going to like the flex mode panel, the flex, like that bottom half that turns black. I thought I was going to like it a lot more in the Flip 4 in one-handed use. And I just realized it actually just gets in my way. All it does is get in my way. Do you feel the same on the Fold 4? Sam, I see you nodding.
Yeah, I don't think that touchpad is very useful. I haven't found it very useful, to be honest.
Right. And it's not just on the Flip. So it sounds like it's on the Fold too, right? V, like you were shaking your head just now.
I mean, like I've tried using like the multiple, like lots of apps have some sort of flex mode compatibility. So when you prop the device open, sort of like at 90 degrees, you can do something sort of different on the bottom half of the screen. And it's fine. Like, I get it. And it's sort of, I'm glad it exists, but I've never found it particularly useful. And yes, to your point, at times it does kind of feel like an active hindrance to whatever it is you're trying to do.
For me, right. For me, I thought this was going to be so great for when I just lean back on my couch and I have it propped up in what Michael Fisher calls banana phone mode, which is like half kind of like curved, right? And then, you know, I want to scroll Reddit on this. And I thought like I could use the touchpad, the new touchpad that they added to the Flex panel as like a cursor for the top half of the screen. And then I realized it's actually easier to scroll Reddit if the screen is just like full screen. And then you just scroll your thumb up. I was like, why didn't I think of this before? I guess I was just not really thinking. But then that's not even the problem. The problem is when I turn off or like I just, you know, X out of the Flex panel. And if I happen to go into another app and come back to Reddit, the Flex panel comes back. Like it won't go away unless you fully disable the feature, which is in advanced settings. So I've been finding myself a little bit frustrated here because I thought that Samsung had made a nice, you know, software tweak to give this form factor, I guess, like a new sort of function or a new mode that would make it more useful and whatever. But it turns out it actually didn't need to. And to be clear, this isn't like something that is happening by default. You have to actively go in and be like, oh, I want Chrome to have this. Oh, I want Reddit to have this. And you can choose not to. And then there's also some apps that have better designed their layouts to work with this. So like Gallery, YouTube, and Camera have way better like Flex mode layouts. So it's specifically this one feature that I don't like and I'm spending a lot of time talking about. But V.
Is that not just the most Samsung thing, though? Like,
it really is.
They have great ideas. And it's just like the execution, it's at best like pretty good. I don't think anyone's like ever super thrilled about it. But when things go wrong, when they have an idea that like just doesn't stick, it's really bad. Like Bixby. But that's a story for another time, maybe. But I think you were asking me if I liked the Flip generally. And I do. I'm with you 100%. This is like Foldables 101 for people who are just sort of like toying with the idea. There's a lot to like about it. And like realistically, the way people should be thinking about it is it's a regular phone when you need it. How much of a benefit is whatever sort of Flex mode functionality you get, sort of like camera stuff and just sort of like the little add-ons that are only possible because your phone can fold in half. And just the novelty of it all, which I still think hasn't worn off. Like, I still love these flip phone style foldables. They're so cool. So if you're getting a solid, pretty close to flagship tier device for a relatively reasonable amount of money that does a bunch of extra things, like, now the argument is like, unless you're completely dyed in the wool iPhone, you know, why not? Like, if you were going to buy an Android phone anyway, the barrier between you and a foldable is much, much smaller. And I thought as of last year with the Z Fold 3, what did Samsung do? They hit the $1,000 price point.
They brought it down. Yeah,
they got it down. The sort of design started to finally feel kind of elegant. The external screen, that was the first time I think they made it bigger as well. So you could use it as a viewfinder when you're lining up selfies and stuff. Like, they got so much right that I kind of recommended it to almost anyone. I would have recommended it to everyone because of those things, except the battery was just kind of whatever. And I'm curious, like, I haven't put in enough daily grind with the Flip to get a sense for it. Charlene, how is the battery on the Z Flip 4? Tell me it's better, please.
Yeah, bro, I've not had to, like, the only day I've had to worry about it running out of juice at the end of the day was when I started my day with like a 9 a.m. gym class or something, which is, if you know me, is very unlike me. I don't even know why I got out of bed that early.
You were doing it for the video. Don't lie.
I really was. It was like, oh, you don't even know how many gym videos I got on this thing. So I started the day full charge at, I want to say, like 9, 10 a.m. Went to like a bunch of things. Shot so many videos. Ended up at like 10, 11 p.m. with maybe like closer to 15, 10%. So still not like the most, right? Like, I would rather it still had like 30% in the bank after 12 hours, but I had been pushing it. I had been doing a lot of, you know, recording video and stuff like that that would drain the battery. And it was a hot day, so I don't know if that affects battery longevity. But when you guys mentioned the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 earlier, I mean, I think it makes a difference, right? I don't think it's just the 3700, like the 400 milliamp hour difference in the battery size here that's doing all the work. I think the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 so far has been great. I mean, I think I had some like issues with the heat, you know, with the phone being a little warm when I was starting this up, and Sam can back me up here because I was like letting him feel it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just like you had it on a table and was just sitting there, and I'm like, wait, yeah. Why is this warm? Why is it this warm?
Exactly. Well, it was downloading apps because it was just starting the phone up. This was like right after we picked up our review units. And since then, I actually haven't had an issue with it running this warm unless I actively left it in the sun. So far, honestly, I've been telling, guys, I don't know if this will come as a shock to either of you. I think I'm going to trade my Pixel 6 Pro for this. Like, I'm going to give up the Pixel 6 Pro.
I was going to say, I feel like this phone is fueling your selfie addiction in a way that no other phone can truly manage.
This is, yeah.
Because you're talking about TikTok, and I was like, TikTok's not quite right. This is all about the selfie.
Sam's got me. No.
Wait, Sherman.
Sam knows me too well.
Sherman, help everyone listening sort of understand your approach to what phone you use for yourself. Because for the longest time, I think you'd use like a Pixel 3, even though we'd like
hated the Pixel 4 because the front-facing camera had like the tiniest distortion that I think the 99% of people could not detect. But the selfie camera had a little bit of distortion, and you said it made your face look fat, and you're like, no, I will not switch to this phone because the selfie camera makes me look bad.
So the Pixel 4 I didn't main for many reasons, one of which being I think they introduced a wide angle selfie camera for the first time to that phone, and in trying to correct the fisheye distortion there, they introduced an issue where my face would look fisheyed, so it was not great, and I never really actually adopted it for the, and what V is saying is that, yeah, I was maining a Pixel 3 for the longest time, even though, then the only reason I gave it up was because Jessica Condit, my wonderful, amazing coworker, dropped my Pixel 3 and cracked the selfie camera, and I could no longer take selfies.
Wait, that's what happened? Your phone's selfie camera was destroyed, and you were like, I cannot live like this?
There were scratches everywhere else, and I was like, I'll live with this. But the selfie camera was broken. I was like, nah, I'm done.
The most Sherlin thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, you've had multiple phones with cracked screens, like broken ports or whatever. But if the selfie camera flicked, no, instant trade-in. Gotta get a new phone.
Look. I know this is very often the roast Sherlin show, and rightly so. But I will say, the reason I've been holding on to the Pixel 6 Pro for as long as I have, in spite of all the bugs, in spite of all the gaslighting, is that it has the best camera. It's like not even just a selfie camera, which is, you know, actually kind of mediocre. The rear cameras are great, and actually they have been great. But I am just surprised I'm ready to give that all up for the Flip 4 because why? The cameras actually aren't so bad. The only time I think the cameras on the Flip 4 are actually kind of awful are, sure, in some low light situations, like very, very low light situations. And then the selfie camera that's on the inside screen can wash you out, right? Like, it just doesn't look so great, especially not in low light. But otherwise, like, I've posted a lot of like picture samples to Instagram and having people vote on them, and all two of the sample sets that I've posted so far, everyone's voted for the Flip 4. It's kind of wild to me that like the camera quality on this has improved so much with just a pair of 12 megapixel cameras. V, do you feel like the Flip 4 has a similar like camera experience for you?
It's definitely better. And like I'm in a weird place with cameras because I'm playing with the flips and the folds and whatever. But because Android 13 just dropped, I've also been like, I've gone back to the Pixel 6 Pro because it's truly just been a while. And I honestly forgot how good those cameras are. Yes. So I'm at the point where like, yeah, Samsung, like you're definitely getting better. You've gotten considerably better over the years, both in terms of, I would say, color science and just like the general usability of your cameras. But if you want, like so many people do, just like the ultimate one click and you're done and you know you've got a great photo waiting for you on the other end, yeah, I'm still Team Pixel.
I know. Same here. Honestly, so my dilemma now, and this is a very unique tech reviewer dilemma that I know I'm very privileged to have. It's very much like well, do I carry three phones around now? Like, or like everyone's been like asking me why I main two phones, and I main an iPhone because I have to cover iPhones. That's because Chris Velasco ditched me. Then I have a Pixel 6 Pro because that is honestly my favorite phone. It has been my favorite phone because of the cameras. And now, like, if I don't trade, like, if I don't give one up or don't exchange them, what am I carrying for my Android main? Is it the Flip or the Pixel, or do I do three? You know,
do three. Like, join me. Join three.
Are you doing three?
Yeah, right now it's iPhone 13, the Fold 4, and the 6 Pro. Just because, like, yes, it's an extremely privileged line of thinking, and like we are extremely lucky to be able to do this, but we have the stuff laying around, and like truly it is in like that informs our coverage too, right? Like,
yeah,
we're
exactly
using devices that have passed sort of through the initial hype cycle, and we're,
yes,
you, and not to be like overly nice to you, because that's just not a thing that we do, but you do a really good job on your Instagram, especially of just like reminding people that these older devices still work, and you use them for, you know, you use them for your photos, you use them for all of these things. Like, it is nice to remind people that this stuff does have a life that exists beyond, yeah, like the Mayfly mentality of a gadget reviewer who has to move on to a new thing every couple of weeks.
Sam, do you feel the same way? I mean, like, what do you mean, first of all?
Still meaning the Z Fold. And so, like, My second phone kind of depends on use cases. And I think it's V brought up a really good point where it's like when you're testing out multiple gadgets and you find yourself just like subconsciously reaching for a different phone other than your main because it has like a better camera or something, you're like, oh, and that's really interesting. Because like in the before times, before the pandemic, like I went on my honeymoon and I had, you know, my main Samsung phone. And then I brought a Pixel that didn't have like a cellular connection or anything just because I wanted that camera. And I didn't want to bring like my big camera around. So it's like I had that. And it's just like, it's really interesting to see. It's like, you know, there are obviously like every phone has its differences, but there's like certain advantages that are so good that it makes you want to carry a second device around just so you have a particular feature, you know, at hand.
I mean, that's been me with the Pixel 6 Pro for the longest. I do think I'm still going to carry it around just because it still takes the best like rear facing photos. But I had that experience throughout this review process of like constantly just reaching for the Flip 4, making sure it's, and that's why I've had like so much daily experience with it. Like for the most part, I take it out like midway through the day, and then the battery obviously lasts all the way through the night, and I'm taking a lot of photos and stuff like that. But I just love using it. It's so weird. I've not had a phone that I just love using like this in all aspects other than like the camera. I just want to use and sit and use it. So I that's why I think we've truly reached a point where this phone, I think, is ready for like the mainstream, right? And I think that, sure, generationally, there doesn't seem to be huge changes, but I think the main one that's a big deal here is the battery life improvement. And then I think the cameras, their microns are a little bit bigger for better low light photos. And that does make a difference for me. The cover display is a bit more useful. You can add more widgets now and then reply to messages. And I have replied to a few Instagram DMs from there.
I was going to say, it's funny because I think the thing that people like the most about the cover screen is that now you can put GIFs on there. And so you can customize it. And I saw, apparently there's some like forums and some subreddits where just people are just sharing all the custom GIFs that you can put on there. And I saw a Pokemon, like a Charmander running across the screen GIF from our friend Julian over at Wired. And that was like, I was like, oh, that's really cool. I still think they need to make that cover screen bigger. I don't know about you, but
I agree with you there. Like, whenever I try to use it as a viewfinder, I can never guess if I'm actually going to be in the picture. So I always, to be safe, use the wide-angle camera in that case. And I would love to be able to have, like, a vague swipe keyboard to reply to messages to, even though I know that's ridiculous. It's still very small. But right now, when you want to reply to a message on the cover display, like, I was in a meeting or something, and I was like, I got a DM or something, and I was like, oh, let's reply from there. You could use, it's, like, very primitive smartwatch days of like, yes, no, LOL, thanks, on my way. That sort of, you know, canned message. And so you can use voice, but then I hadn't had it set up at the time for voice. So it was not like you had to open your phone to do the permissions thing. So it's still not all there, but I do like being able to like, I was... I was trying to tan on like the roof or something when I was testing this phone out, and I needed to like leave in 10 minutes. And I was like, oh, I don't want to go through, like, I don't want to talk because there's people around me. But I was able to just use the cover display and be like, swipe, 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 set timer. That's it. Like, it, I didn't need to do too much. I didn't need, also, I love that you can record video and photo with this small thing, because it does not look like you're taking a video of yourself when all you're holding is a half of a phone. So it's very subtle. No one will know you're taking
once
a zillion
selfies.
Once again,
fueling the selfie addiction, so you can take selfies without other people knowing you're taking selfies. I love it. This is great. This really is the phone for you.
This is why. This is my very biased opinion of the Z Flip 4 as a selfie-taking phone. But on to less biased opinions. Any last thoughts on the Flip before we talk about the watches?
No, I want to get to the watch, but I do, just to quickly note about the sort of cover display. Like, I want so badly for that screen to just take up a little more of that front face, because mm-hmm. I want an iPod. Like, I want to just be able to control, like, give me Spotify, give me like a full-ish screen Spotify experience, or Samsung Music, or whatever, like whatever you've got, just put it out there.
Yeah.
So I can actively choose what to listen to without ever having to open the phone. It's the yes. one thing.
Just more than just play yes. and like I fast can. Forward and yes. rewind. Just like a couple yes. more things. Yes. Yeah,
I'm begging you.
I agree.
Please, for the love of God, let me relive my 2005 high school days when I had an iPod and I could just, this little thing that's just good at doing one thing. Like, giving that screen a little more room to breathe, just, it could open up the possibilities for this phone pretty dramatically. So Samsung, if you're listening, and I know you are, give it to us. We want it. Okay,
bigger cover yeah. screen. Do it.
Do it, and bring those Spotify tools, because yes, I have been using the music player widget or the Spotify widget, and indeed you can only do play, skip, whatever, and then you have a little, there's the name of the song that will play at the top of those buttons, but you tap them and it does nothing, or it tells you to open your phone again. I'm like, no, you can right now, even in the size it is now, you can easily let me tap that and go find a different playlist from the screen. So if you're able to, yes, bigger cover display, but if not, you can just tweak the widget still. It's like a software issue. It's fixable. Anyway, so V, have you been using the Watch 5 or the Watch 5 Pro?
I don't have a Watch 5 Pro. I have a Watch 5, and so far it's...
Oh, I forget.
Yes. yes.
Only we're one
comes,
of the
Here comes the gloating.
Go ahead. It's okay. Go for it.
I think we're one of very few people to also have a Watch 5 Pro. Okay.
Well, I'm very pleased for you. And I am undoubtedly a bit jealous, because... I've long since like given up the Apple Watch. I've been maining like a Garmin Fenix 6X, which I love, partially because I'm trying to be a little more outdoorsy. Like, I'm an old man. I should spend more time out in the real world. That's great. But also, it's got a battery. You don't have to charge for 3 weeks. And that has completely reset my expectation for what a smartwatch should be able to do. So the Watch 5 has been completely pleasant to you so far. It's probably the best Wear OS thing I've ever used, but I think I'm at like, it's been a little over a day, a little over 24 hours, and I'm at like 54%. So like, fine, not bad by sort of classic smartwatch standards, but it's not where I am anymore. And I'm curious, Sherlyn, what has your experience been with the 5 versus the 5 Pro?
So the 5 is where I've been spending more of my time. I think the 5 Pro, I'm really only going to do really like durability and battery
again?
Testing. No, I don't know if y'all saw this on my Twitter, you know, like you're one of my big fans or whatever. But I've done this ridiculous thing of where I wear 3 watches to the gym. And you're not really technically supposed to do this, but this is more of like a, I just want to get in all my workouts tracked at the same time. Anyway, I wear the the Watch 5 on my right wrist, and I tune it for the right wrist. Then I wear the Apple Watch on my left, as well as then for this one time where I was testing the Watch 5 Pro, I wore the Watch 5 Pro above the Apple Watch further up my forearm. So then that day at class, one of the workouts we had to do was front rack kettlebell squats. I don't know if y'all know what that is, but it's when you take the kettlebell, which is like a round thing with a grip, you flip it onto your wrist sort of, and you squat with it. So basically it's like flipping a giant ball, like a heavyweight, onto the back of your arm a little bit, and then doing squats while holding it like that. So, but the thing is that like, I didn't remember that I had the watches on. So the first time I flipped like a 26 pound on each wrist, I was like, oh shit, one of them must have broke. One of them must have broke, but neither of them did. My left wrist was, you know, perfectly fine. The Apple Watch and the Galaxy Watch 5 Pro were both durable, which, you know, and also the Galaxy Watch 5 on my right wrist was fine. So, I mean, they're both fairly durable, but they definitely were very cumbersome. And again, I had three watches on. Like, it was going to be cumbersome no matter how small they were, but the Watch 5 Pro particularly felt like something I don't think I would enjoy wearing to the gym, especially if I had to, like, front rack anything else or, like, clean anything else. Like, it's just a lot in the way. I don't know what your experience at the gym has been like, V.
Well, I haven't been to the gym in the in a uh-huh. while. But question, okay, cool. So do you remember probably pretty close to when we first met and pretty close to when we started working together, we got the Galaxy S7 Active. And we were shooting a video,
oh my gosh,
and you,
yes.
I think it was only, I think it was like designed so you could drop it maybe like 10 feet, and instead you dropped it down like a stairwell that encompassed like three floors of the old Engadget yeah. office. Can you do that yeah. again with the Watch 5
no.
Active and just see if
I will not.
Okay.
I'm one of three people that has the Watch 5 Pro. I'm not going to do this. No. Okay. the story is, this was one of my first reviews for Engadget, and I was like, oh, okay, let's test the durability. There's this beautiful staircase in the office building. Samsung's like, you can drop this up to 6 feet, right? In my head, somehow I converted 6 feet, which is the height of a person, to like 6 stories, which is the height of a building.
Maybe 6 meters. Let's be a little generous.
Maybe 6 meters.
Let's
yeah, maybe
that.
I did 6 meters in my head, right? I, you know, at that point, I had only been in the US like 5-ish years. So I was still thinking imperial metric. Anyway, decided to go to the top flight of the three flight stair thing, and then dropped it, and it expectedly broke. And we caught that on video, and then I told Samsung, they were like, what the fuck did you, well, they were like, what did you do? And I was like, they never sent me an Active phone ever again, just FYI. So
it's not as bad as the time I destroyed a Sony Xperia while shooting an Engadget.
Oh, I hated
it. I know. I felt so bad about that. But suffice it to say, like, when you're doing this kind of, when you're working on a review like this, like, there is usually language in the document that you signed to get the stuff that, like, you can't smash it, you can't treat it, you know, outside of, like, the normal bounds of the way a person would use a phone like this. So, like, there will be limitations to, like, how detailed we might be able to get, I think, but
yes, about the durability anyway, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, that's been like one of my biggest questions about the Watch 5 Pro. Like, if I'm going to buy one of these things, and at this point, like, I could feasibly see that. Like, I enjoy a Samsung phone. I could live with a Samsung watch, but it would have to be the Pro. Like, I need the battery life. I need the durability. I don't mind the chunk. I like big watches, and I know that's not for everybody, but.
Really quickly, before we move on to like general other thoughts, I wanted to ask, like, I don't enjoy the new curvature on the underside so much because it feels like it's almost oppressive for me on my wrist. And this ties into the other thing I want to talk about, which is that it makes it more uncomfortable for me when I want to test sleep tracking, which people who know this podcast know that I hate testing sleep tracking. And I already hate it. And this feels like it's just, I don't know, it wraps around my wrist a little more snugly, which was the whole point to begin with. But, you know, Sam, do you like to use your watch to track your sleep?
No, but I have a smart mattress, so, yeah. But I think you bring up an interesting point because, you know, when you have bad battery life, in like, you know, especially on the Galaxy Watch 5, you're getting about 2 days of battery life, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That means, like, when do you charge it? Do you charge it at night? Because if you're charging at night, that means you're getting every other night of sleep tracking. So it's like you're getting very spotty information. And if not, then you have to charge it in the morning. And so it makes the whole idea of using your watch to sleep track a little less useful.
That's a really good point. And also just to throw out there that, like, as it stands right now, like, we have had these watches for maybe a week, something like that. This battery life is as good as this battery life is ever going to be. It's all downhill from here. So if you do rely on these devices for sleep tracking, give it like a year and a half, you'll probably have to be way more judicious about when you charge and like when you get to do it. Because like there will come a point if you use these things long enough that it will probably not make it through the night. So that's why, again, that's, I know I'm talking about battery stuff a lot, but that's why like watches with multi-day, multi-week batteries have become such a thing for me. Because you know at some point that capacity is going to dwindle. Like, you're not going to be able to get that full extent. Is what's on the other side of that divide still going to be good enough for you? I'd rather spend a little more on a watch that I know is going to last for 3 to 4 years versus something I might have to consider replacing in two.
I mean, Garmin versus Samsung watches are kind of different beasts too, right? Like, the Garmin watches are very, very specific purpose-wise, and the OS probably just drains a lot less battery, probably does a little bit less stuff in less terms stuff. Of the multi-
screen technology is also, like, not nearly as nice. So there's trade-offs for sure, but...
Yeah. But, you know, I do think that if someone's looking for a long-term, like, battery life above all, then there is definitely devices that you should consider that are not Samsung or Wear OS watches. And to Sam's point, I think it was your point that this is the best Wear OS watch you've used, Sam. You know, V, God, I'm so confused. I was surprised because I was like,
this is a compliment, oh, wait, Sam.
Yeah, it is.
I was going to do the opposite way. Okay. Same page.
Fair. Yeah. Makes sense.
I was just like, oh, wait, this is a Wear OS watch. Like, I keep forgetting. I keep thinking, like, why is Tizen so shitty all of a sudden? And I'm like, oh, for a Wear OS watch, this is good. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, there is that touchless. There's that, like, digital bezel there that I barely even use on this model. Like, it's just not great. I prefer swiping. And then, you know, if there were a mechanical bezel, I would use it. And just in general, this watch so far, to your point, has, like, yes, lasted about as long as an Apple Watch for me. But I generally charge it around, like, midday, like, when I am working and I'm not actively using my watch. So I haven't found, like, and to answer your question, Stan, like, when do we charge it? I charge it at that time, so I'm not usually using it to track sleep or whatever. It charges fast enough, too. Like, in something like 30 minutes, you get like 50% up. So if you're only, you know, and if I also charge daily because it becomes like the habit thing as opposed to like a, you know,
yeah, I've heard a lot of people have taken to like charging their phone like after they like first get up in the morning while they're like brushing their teeth and like doing like their morning routine. And so like by the time like they've brushed their teeth and they've had their coffee or whatever, then the phone's back to normal. And if you know, if you can do that, if you find that in your routine, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I do want to say that like, I feel like I've said this a lot, so I don't want to repeat myself too much, but, like, I feel like I'm like, mentally preparing myself for the death of the rotating bezel. Because Samsung hasn't said this yet, but the fact that they didn't put it on either of the Watch 5 or the Watch 5 Pro, and they're still keeping the Galaxy 4 Classic on sale, I feel like this might be the death of the rotating bezel, which makes me sad. I kind of get it because it's like makes things like a little more complicated from the manufacturing standpoint, but you know, this is like my like mental RIP to the rotating bezel, which I love, and I'm still using the watch for a classic, and it's just like being able to dismiss notifications or like spam calls or calendar reminders just by like, I don't even have to look at the watch. I just like rotate it left or right because I know like, you know, left is
the direction.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's so fast and it's so easy. And I'm sad that it's not going to continue. Probably they haven't said it for sure, but this is like my eulogy to the rotating bezel.
I'm with you. We have talked for like almost a full hour about Samsung. So I think, you know, we have to save our other thoughts, like long-term battery performance, for example, for another time. But, you know, V, still so confused. V, do you have any final thoughts?
No parting thoughts. I mean, like, I think we've covered a lot of ground here, but it's always a pleasure to hang out with you guys and just sort of talk shop again. It's good for the spirit. So I'm glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And, you know, I have to make a disclaimer that everything I said about Chris Velasco was a teasing and not any, you know, genuine malintent, that sort of thing. So where can people find you online, Chris Velasco?
Well, it's funny you should ask because I've just changed a bunch of stuff. You can find me at Chris Velasco on Twitter. If you want to follow Velaskfield on Instagram for whatever reason, check out Your Pal Velasco. Because that's a thing that I do now.
YourPalVelazco, isn't that right?
Exactly. Thank you. I wasn't going to spell that for myself.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye.
So outside of Samsung reviews, there has been some other news this week, particularly Apple like, in case you forgot, iPhones are on the horizon. Apple may be planning to have its iPhone 14 event in September or on September 7th. This is according to a Bloomberg report. I believe Mark Gurman is the one that, yes, it was by Mark Gurman. According to sources or people with knowledge of the matter, Apple is aiming to launch the iPhone 14 at a September 7th event, which is very, very soon. Typically, the Apple iPhone launch event is in mid-September. But I guess, I mean, sure, move it up earlier. I don't need a break between Samsung and Apple. Cool.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, we were talking to some other, you know, colleagues in tech media and stuff. And I think the word on the street is everyone's just kind of annoyed. Like, it's too soon. Normally, it's the second week of September. And so by putting it on September 7th, assuming this is correct, it just feels a little early. And like, kind of like you said, I think a lot of people are looking for a little bit more of a break between events because, you know, we had Samsung Unpacked a couple of weeks ago and, Google doesn't usually do their thing until October. So it's nice to have like, you know, Apple in the middle of September with a little bit of buffer on each side.
Right. Right. With the, especially these like the big companies, right? Because not to forget, there's little companies like OnePlus just launched the 10T. 10T? I already forget the model numbers.
And they launched the 10T on the same day as Samsung Unpacked. And like that was probably a mistake from their side. But, you know, who are we to tell companies what their scheduling should be?
I mean, not to like be moaning and groaning about the timing here, because Apple launching its devices a little bit earlier may make room for other companies to not overlap, right, the rest of the year. Like, I think one of our biggest issues was like all the, like last year, I swear to God, last year it was like Tuesday Apple event, Wednesday Google event, and then Thursday, like Amazon had a thing that was not that important, or Facebook had a thing. So it's like, all right, maybe Apple doing this is, you know, good for us. But anyway, enough of the like media insider stuff, because I can complain about that forever. At the next iPhone event anyway, according to this same Bloomberg report, you know, we're expecting to also see new low and high end iPads, multiple new Macs, as well as three Apple Watch models. I don't think any of this is really a surprise. I think we've been waiting for like a MacBook, like bigger MacBook Airs or like newer MacBook Pros with the M2. So that's pretty to be expected. And then we've got the low and high end iPads, which are for sure due for a refresh. And you know, the Apple Watch Series 8's got to come, right? WatchOS 9 needs a new machine to be in. Sam, do any of these products excite you?
No, I mean, kind of like you said, I think a lot of this is like, you know, Apple has a very like, you know, set roadmap. Like, you know, they come out with like the lower power stuff, and then like they revamp the MacBook Pros in the fall. I think to me this is kind of like the Apple Watch is year time to shine, just because it's like, you know, the rumor is we might be getting an Apple Watch Pro, which I you know, we kind of saw like, you know, Samsung do the Galaxy Watch 5 Pro, and then now this is Apple's turn to do like, you know, their big fancy, you know, kind of twist on the same idea. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how they do that. And I think Apple will probably have a somewhat different approach to that. Less focused on like the necessarily like outdoorsy, like I don't think we're going to see a titanium frame. But I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know about a titanium frame. I feel like that might still be in the mix. Like, you don't know. I don't really know what kind of material they want to use for their casing. I do feel like a pro model would potentially be more durable. I almost feel like, you know, upgraded sensors maybe, and more like built-in stuff like GPS without your phone tied to it, or like,
right, or just even like a bigger screen in general, I think is something that I think people would be curious about.
Here's a question for you. Do you think Apple, not only in the Pro model, but let's start with the Pro model, will Apple ever move away from the square face?
Ooh, this is like one of those big things, is because like you have like the watch camp. It's like there's people who like round faces and there's people who like square faces. And then there's a lot of people who just don't care or don't have the choice, because it's not like there are any other like native Apple Watch smartwatches. Like you have one choice. And so I think there's like this weird Stockholm syndrome where like people love the square face of the Apple Watch because that's the only thing they can get. So they have to love it.
Right.
I personally would really love to see Apple do a round face Apple Watch. I kind of, you know, we were talking about this last week, but like, I'm kind of more of like a watch traditionalist. I like that round face. At the same time, that would probably be a lot of work from the software team, because they would have to re-engineer how a lot of the UI, like UI layout and display looks on a round watch face.
I don't think we're due a round Apple Watch anytime soon. I just wanted to throw that out there just to be like, stir things up.
I think it would be really interesting, but I agree with you. I don't think it's coming anytime soon.
Yeah. I don't really know what else to expect from, let's say, like a pro model of the Apple Watch, but man, I hope it does better sleep tracking, I guess, even though that's not really important to me as a non-watch wearer to bed. But other things like the low-end and high-end iPad, right? Like, looking at the product list that we expect for the next Apple event, we've got iPhones, Macs, iPads, and watches, right? I would rank the iPhone 14 as the top most probable, then the watches, and then the MacBooks. So I feel like the iPads, maybe Apple will do a separate event for them like they've done before, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. The iPad, like the whole category is just kind of in a weird place because they added the M1 chip to the iPad, and now the iPad's really fast and faster than it really needs to be. But I think... So it's like, really, they're just talking about like filling out the different sizes and making, you know, filling out the different price points and making sure there's like a configuration that works for everybody. But like, I know, I feel like the iPad is kind of a less interesting category, at least for right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like iPadOS is kind of matured. And then what are we waiting on? M2 iPads at this point? It's like, oh, ho-hum. And it's kind of weird that we're at a point with the iPad that's like, oh, boring. New chip that's like even more like incredible and faster than before. Aw, I don't know. Okay, well, moving on. Sam, did you hear about this new report that says there's been sexual harassment and gender discrimination at Nintendo of America?
Yeah, and this is just like another facepalm event because it seems like the whole Blizzard Activision thing all over again, but this time at Nintendo. And it's just like... you know, you have people just, they're claiming that they've been discriminated against, that there's, you know, there's the weird report about one Nintendo employee writing about how it's okay to be sexually attracted to Vaporeon, which is just like an insane topic. It's like, you know, he's debating about which Pokemon is sexier, and it's like, oh, okay, I don't really know how to tackle this. And then, you know, there are more, you know, really tangible concerns about how, you know, some women employees are getting paid less than, you know, their male counterparts. And it's just like, it seems like, you know, there's a lot of this going on in the video game sector and industry in general. And it's just really sad to see this happen, especially, you know, we saw this whole thing happen at Blizzard Activision. It's just like, that should have been a call to action for every other company to go through their company and be like, hey, what are we doing here? We need to fix this. We need to make sure that people are being respected and people are being paid fairly. And it's just really frustrating.
You mentioned that that Vaporeon post that one employee I guess shared in the workplace. I just want to make clear what happened here. So basically, Kotaku published a report where they interviewed a few, you know, employees at Nintendo. And you also, by the way, wouldn't think of Nintendo as like a frat boy culture type of place where there's a lot of sexual harassment and gender discrimination going on, because Nintendo has so much more of a Disney feel to it, right? It's more of a... And then the Disney association is not great either, because Disney has been racist for so long and just toxic for a very long time as well. So maybe we should have known all along. But this report talks not only about that post about Vaporeon, like you said, is also about, you know, being paid differently, right? This one person that they interviewed or spoke to was a contractor that found out that she was being paid $3 less than a junior male tester, and that she had to struggle to get, you know, a pay increase. And she also felt like as a queer worker, she felt subjected to inappropriate comments made by male colleagues who made advances on her, and she had rejected them. And then, you know, apparently they said, oh, you're a lesbian. That's kind of sad. Apparently a significantly older coworker had told her that. So this is the sort of stuff that I think in the past we've heard about, right? Like, I feel like we hear about these things happening at workplaces, and specifically in the gaming industry, it feels like more prevalent than most. Like, gaming has always been so dominated by male like workers and male players and all of that stuff. So it's good that people are speaking up now. It's disappointing to see our some of our favorite brands sometimes be, you know, mired in all of this. But I don't know. Do you feel disappointed at Nintendo, Sam?
Yeah, it's more of a disappointment because, you know, Nintendo has been around for so long and they're like, you know, obviously one of the biggest names in video games. And you just want these companies to do better. And I think the other thing that kind of like is really disappointing is that there was a report earlier this year from IGN about how contractors at Nintendo of America described themselves as second-class citizens. And so this kind of ties into some of the reporting that Kotaku did. And it's just like, you got to make sure that people are feeling respected and feeling safe and not being harassed at the workplace. This is common ground for any workplace. And, you know, to see a report like this come out in the spring and then to have another one come out, you know, this summer, it's just, you know, you kind of wonder, like, what's really going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. And it feels like also it's something that's in every company rather than just like Activision Blizzard, you know what I mean? So this is, I'm sure we're going to hear more about not only Nintendo of America, but lots of other big gaming companies soon. Speaking of Activision Blizzard, by the way, this week we also learned that the company was accused of spying on protesting workers. Great news. Like, just take, like, learn the lesson, I guess. Is what the young kids say? Is it take the L? Is that what it means?
I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
The Communications Workers of America Union has filed an unfair labor practice charge accusing Activision Blizzard of illegally surveilling workers during a walkout in July when they were protesting over gender inequity. So it's kind of like your worst nightmare, right? Like when you're protesting or when you're like unionizing or whatever and you get, you know, fear of retaliation or you don't know what the company is doing to you. I don't know, Sam, what did you feel when you heard about this?
This kind of ties into me with like, there's a lot of labor issues at play in the media, tech media industry or just the tech industry. And, you know, we see like, you know, Starbucks is fighting back against, you know, stores that are trying to unionize. And Amazon is fighting back against warehouse employees that are trying to unionize. And now Activision is kind of fighting back against, you know, some of their unionized workers. And it's just, like, it's really sad because you see these companies, it's like, you know, these people are organizing together to argue for better benefits, better protections, better job security. And like, you know, if we live in a world where companies get the final say and anything they say goes, it's not going to be a balanced, you know, you're not going to have a good balance between, you know, company goals and, you know, personal employee goals. And I think that's kind of where that like battleground is right now.
Yeah, I think we're having a reckoning all across like every industry, right? Like it's people are so afraid of unions. People are so afraid of giving power to workers when actually it's mutually beneficial or it can be mutually beneficial. And the idea of like your workers are only resources for you, you know, to churn out productivity and meet goals, that's antiquated at this point. So, you know, hopefully not only the gaming industry, but everyone else that works in any sort of non-self-employed capacity will find a way to have a meaningful like relationship with their employers. I also want to point out, though, that Activision Blizzard did, you know, provide statements to Engadget saying that the chat accusations were false. The Communications Workers Association, the CWA's characterization willfully ignores the facts while preventing the company from protecting workers against abuse. And it also argued that its only overseers for workouts were public relations staffers standing at a, quote, respectful distance to answer questions from the press. So, I mean, Activision Blizzard denies that it was spying on these protesting workers. I always want to just, like, provide what the company said. Just so y'all know, this is what the company's point of view is. So, you know, that's the story. And obviously, we're going to keep following the developments as they happen. On to something hopefully a little bit more fun / maybe a little bit underwhelming. Android 13 is out of beta this week. Hey, I did not expect this news. It happened, I want to say, on Monday. And when I was reading the press release before we like decided to write it out, I was like, oh, Android 13 comes out through AOSP. Cool. Like, all right, whatever. And then I realized, I was like, wait, this is Android 13 we're talking about. It's not even out of beta yet. It's been like in beta for so long that I'm like, I thought it was already out of beta, but no. So this week, Android 13 is coming out to the public. It's no longer in beta. That doesn't mean it'll be stable, though. I doubt that that's the case.
What? And this is just for Pixel phones right now. You know, we're expecting a wider rollout. It always takes some time for, you know, the OEMs like Samsung and OnePlus and whoever to kind of customize the latest version of Android for their specific phones.
And to, like, refresh your memory, this version of Android, I personally don't feel brings a lot of major updates or improvements. Like, Android 12 brought Material U. That was beautiful. This time around, we're getting, like, more customizable icon types that the system can generate for you. We've got, like, a new QR code scanner in the quick settings dashboard. We've got a new, like, media playback box on the lock screen. Little things like that that are more obvious. The rest of the stuff seem to be a bit more under the hood. We've got more fine-tuned privacy controls. We've got, like, a different image picker. Again, if this sounds granular and your eyes are kind of glazing over, that is Android 13's fault, not mine. But yeah, if you have a Pixel, you can already get it today. Check for an update in your phone. And if not, just try to force update it. Sam, I saw that you checked out a very interesting looking gaming monitor. I don't know if it's a gaming monitor. You saw a very interesting looking monitor from Samsung this week?
Yes, the Samsung Odyssey Arc. And it is a gaming monitor, even though it is a 55-inch display, which is like, number one, is like, who has room on a desk for a 55-inch monitor? But honestly, I tried it out. I played around with it for about an hour-ish, and it's kind of incredible. That said, it cost $3,500. So this thing is like the same price as like a high-end TV. And so what Samsung is doing here is, you know, they've been kind of like expanding their Odyssey gaming monitor line. And this is kind of their new flagship. It's got a mini LED panel, 55 inches. And Samsung says this is the world's first gaming monitor that is 55 inches, has 165 hertz refresh rate, and a 1 millisecond response time. And so those are like, you know, really great specs. You just want, you want good refresh rate and good response time, so you don't get that lag or ghosting in games. And then, you know, it has a 1000R curve, so it kind of wraps around you. And it was kind of funny because it's like, I went there and I was asking the Samsung, he's like, so how close am I allowed to sit to this thing? It's like, you're probably going to want to keep, like, you know, a good 2 to 3 feet back, because if you just get your face into it, it's too much screen. And it's really incredible. And then they have not one, but two remotes, both of which have solar panels built in. So you don't have to worry about recharging them. Though if you live in a cave or something, there is a USB-C port on them. So you can still plug those in. They have on the one remote, it's the wireless ARC dial. And that's how you use to change between a whole bunch of different gaming modes. You can, you know, it has your standard gaming stuff, you know, changes automatically between genres for, like, if you're playing a shooter or a fighting game or something like that. But it also has a multi-view mode, so you can have multiple windows or apps open at once. And you can also have a flex move screen. So if for some reason you don't need, like, all 55 inches, you can move the screen around to different positions. There is one little caveat. It does have four HDMI 2.1 inputs, but because of a limitation of HDMI, you can only use one input at a single time. So if you have, say, like your PC or your Xbox plugged in, you can only use that and then the built-in apps on the TV. So the TV supports, like, you know, Samsung's browser, and it also supports a bunch of game streaming, cloud game streaming services like GeForce Now, Stadia, Xbox Cloud Gaming. So you can only have one external output on the screen at the same time, and then you can use, you know, two of the apps that are built in on the monitor itself.
It runs with some kind of OS. It's not something that you, like...
Yep, this runs, you know, Samsung's like smart TV OS.
Right.
And so you have all those, you know, the same functionality. The only reason this isn't a TV per se is because it doesn't have a built-in TV tuner.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So think of it more as a TV than as a monitor that you, like, extend or like, you know, plug into your computer, I'm guessing?
Well, I mean, you can certainly use it as a monitor, but just from, like, a, you know, technicality standpoint, right, that's kind of the main difference.
Okay. And then
finally, there's the big party trick. You know, a lot of people like having a portrait mode on the monitor, and this thing has a portrait mode too, except Samsung calls it the cockpit mode. And you can rotate it 180 degrees into portrait mode, and it's hard to describe how this thing actually feels, because that curve, when you put it into portrait mode, it curves almost over the top of your head.
Huh.
And so it feels like you're sitting behind, like you're in a cockpit of, you know, a plane, because you have that curved glass or a curved screen that kind of simulates the curved glass you'd get in a cockpit. And it's just like really kind of crazy and weird. And like, I have never used a monitor like this. So it was just, I had a blast.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy305love in the chat was asking, it's like, oh, did Samsung let you take that home? Very much no. I really want to take it home. But even the one I checked out was still in pre-production. So there's RGB lighting in the back that, you know, will sync to your content. But it was only on blue that day because it's still, you know, they're running through a couple of the pre-production things. It's scheduled to go on sale sometime in September.
But
it was just like, yeah, and it really kind of opened my eyes. And it's like, I know this is like really bad of me, but I was like, oh, I want a desk with like three of those all in cockpit mode, all right next to each other. And it's like, this is like the most insane setup because each one is $3,500. So now we're looking at like over $10,000 for a setup like that. But it like, it looks awesome.
I mean, I have two questions for you, but before I get to my two questions, I too find it difficult to describe a curve. But when you're in cockpit mode, did you feel like the it was like overwhelming to the point where you felt like the screen might fall on you?
No, it's actually really stable. There's a huge, it has a huge square base. And if you check out our hands-on with it, you can see that like I go in and I rotate it and... You know, the back and the stand are pretty stable. It also does come with a wall mount included. So if you want to like make sure it's like attached to something that's not going to go anywhere, you can do that too.
And my other question is a potentially stupid question, which is why are there two remotes? Like, what would you need two remotes for?
So one remote is kind of like a standard TV remote, and that's just for like changing settings really quickly. The wireless arc dial is basically you have that on your desk, and that's for switching between like multi-view mode or flex move screen really quickly. And it also has like a volume control. And, you know, because it's a dial, it's actually super easy to use. It only took me like, you know, a few minutes to like get used to like, oh, switching between modes, adjusting dial, and you can switch inputs and on that too. So it's really, you know, I think, you know, for all the people who like hate like adjusting their monitor's settings with those like buttons that are often like hidden behind the back of the thing. It's so much nicer to use. I know like, you know, more recently some companies have been putting joysticks, which are great, but this is even better. And I kind of wish that like, at least for all high-end monitors, that they come with like a really nice wireless remote that you can just, you know, adjust the volume. And oh, I forgot to mention, this thing has six speakers on it too. Most monitors just don't have any audio at all. But this thing has six speakers, one in each corner, and then it has two subwoofers in back. And so you get way better sound than you'd ever expect from a monitor, which usually it's like, if they have audio at all, it's usually an afterthought. And so you get almost that, it's not quite 360 spatial sound, but you get that kind of immersive, you know, every multidimensional sound effect.
Yeah. I'm not a gamer, but I am very tempted to fight you for reviewing this now. I'm just like, I think I want this.
I have no idea if Samsung's even going to send stuff out. Because apparently, when you order this, you kind of need like a white glove delivery service because it's like, it's so big and it's relatively fragile. You know, you can't just throw this thing around. So, you know, they have to have people come and deliver it to your doorstep and help you get it in wherever you live. That seems like a big, you know, a big to do. And on top of that, I personally don't even know if I have space for it in my place.
Right.
I think I would try to find room, but yeah, it's just a huge, giant gaming display. And, you know, we've seen the trend of like monitors getting bigger and bigger. Like, you know, just a few years ago, the standard monitor size was 24 inches, and now it's 27 and it's getting closer to 30. And so now we have this 55 inch thing and that's going to knock the average all out of whack.
I know. I don't know. Yeah. Like you said, I don't know if we're ever going to get a review unit in, but I am very tempted. I haven't seen like also if you're listening or watching this, go check out our hands-on video. We've been playing it on the live stream of the Engadget podcast recording and it's like straight gadget porn for me right now. I'm just like, oh yes, that thing turns. Yeah. That thing
That's a good way to describe it because it's like, that's one of those, these drool-worthy gadgets that like, if you had infinite amounts of money, you'd absolutely love to have one. At the same time, it's like, in the real world, when I'm thinking about like, oh, I gotta pay for stuff and, you know, they can't just magically appear this thing in my home. It's like, now I gotta decide like, oh, do I want to, you know, pay my rent this month or have this giant gaming display?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, speaking of gadget porn that might be a bit more affordable, Adidas this week announced or launched its new solar headphones that are charged by light, sure, but can also be charged by your bedroom light, which just, I'm not great at science. I'm better at tech science. But these are the RPT-02 Sol wireless headphones, and they can store up to 80 hours they feature up to 80 hours of stored playtime, and they'll cost about $229. So, you know, not like your average $3,500 curved gaming monitor. But what we've seen a spate of like light powered or solar powered headphones come out recently. What do you think of this trend, Sam?
I think it's cool. I think, you know, one of the things that like, I think is annoying for people today is just like constantly have to worry about all their different devices being charged. And it just like, it obviously it's not a huge deal, but there is like some like low lying, like mental tax that you have to deal with. It's like, I got to charge my watch. I got to charge my phone. I got to charge my tablet. I got to charge my laptop. And so any thing that you can have that you just don't have to worry about, hey, is it, you know, do I have to plug it in or do I have to like make sure and top it off? It makes your life a little bit easier to deal with. And I think, you know, one of the interesting things is that for a lot of solar powered gadgets, you know, your typical like bedroom lamp light or, you know, indoor light is usually not enough to keep it charged. And so I think it's interesting that like, oh, it can be charged by sunlight or by indoor lighting. And so I think that's really nice to have that, you know, flexibility where you don't have to worry about it like, oh, I put it on my desk and my desk isn't near a window. And okay, now my solar charging thing is useless. So you don't have to worry about that with this, I think. And so that's definitely a good thing.
It sounds, yeah, I mean, I'm not fully up to speed on the actual science of how the difference between natural light and so-called artificial light is. But yes, these are on-ear headphones, by the way, not like true wireless earbuds. They have like the headband linking the two ear cups. And, you know, we've seen the RPT-01 before, which were nice. And this is also not Adidas' like first headphones. Also, Adidas is teaming up with a company called Zaun Industries on these. I like the idea that like you don't have to use solar / natural light to charge these, if only because like you don't know, like some people don't ever see the light of day, you know what I mean? Like not that you can't charge it any other way, right? There's obviously going to be like standard wired charging available, but if you, I don't know, work in a place that's always in fluorescent lighting and you just want to like leave your headphones there and let them charge, hopefully this will work for them too. The headband of these headphones are made of a flexible light cell material made by a Swedish solar tech company called Powerfoil. So it can actually be, this solar cell that they're talking about, it can actually be screen printed onto plastic. So it can actually be brought to all kinds of other like things like walls or cars or other types of consumer electronics. So maybe one day we can see light powered devices in more places. So I think that's pretty cool. And one last thing that happened this week that I just wanted to shout out because it seems just so, 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 so petty and so right up my alley. Airbnb has started testing anti-party technology. Oh my gosh. In the US and Canada, it'll look for signs of potentially high-risk reservations. Sam, how does this make you feel? Like, are you like me and you're like curmudgeonly and old and you're like, everybody should stop partying past 11 p.m.? What do you like to do?
I think it's like understandable because, you know, No Airbnb host, wants to be the person where, you know, a bachelor party comes in and they just tear up the place and they think it's like, oh, we're gonna pretend to be, you know, Spinal Tap and just like go buck wild. But like, you know, and they, you know, Airbnb already does this a little bit to a certain extent where, like, you know, you can set limits on the amount of people and, like, you know, a lot of hosts would be like, hey, you have to have a certain amount of guests, like, and even some hosts will, like, will come meet you and, like, make sure that, like, you're not having, you know, too many people over. Where the thing that, like, gets, you know, and so my question is, like, how do they really determine potentially high-risk reservations?
Right? Exactly.
And, like, you know, I guess you can look at age as, like, if you have, like, you know, 15, 18 year olds in an Airbnb. Okay. Yeah. That's probably a good sign that like something is going to go just awry and, you know, maybe we'll start throwing chairs in the pool or something like that. But, you know, it's hard to tell how far like this system is going to go in terms of like screening for potentially nefarious partygoers who are staying at an Airbnb.
So the Airbnb has been testing this in Australia already, and also, you know, has provided some of the general factors that it looks at to detect potentially high-risk reservations. They'll look at things such as how long the booker, the person's booking, has had their Airbnb account, how far away the listing is from where they're based, and their history of positive reviews. So, like, obviously, like, a review process that helps people kind of not have an honor system, but, like, it's like your Uber rating, right? If you're going to keep throwing up in Ubers, you're probably not going to get another Uber in a long time. And then if someone is trying to make a booking during the week or over the weekend is also another thing that people will consider. Like, Super Bowl weekend, I bet they're on, like, super high alert, that sort of thing.
Sure, sure. Or, like, Mardi Gras, you know, if you're making an Airbnb reservation over Mardi Gras, it's like, chances are that that reservation might get a little wild.
Right. And you know, if you've planned a stay of one or two nights only over a weekend in the same city that you live, they'll also flag that. And then in those situations, you know, if you've been precluded from staying at an entire home based on those factors, you can still book a hotel room or a private, like, private room. But if you do that, then... they say the host is more likely to be at the property. Like, all right, I gotta check you out here before they allow you to take on the private room. So this is following, by the way, a worldwide ban on parties at Airbnb properties that was enacted back in June. And it was supposedly to have been brought in on a temporary basis after COVID-19, just to kind of... The reasoning was, like, social distancing is important, right? But... I mean, nobody, like you said, no host wants to see their property trash. So this, I kind of get it, but I also think it's just kind of funny to watch. I'm just like, yeah, I'm here eating my popcorn. But this is also the latest in a bunch of things that have, like, annoyed people about Airbnb. Julio, our live stream video producer, has mentioned that, like, oh, yet another reason to not use Airbnb. And Ben, our podcast producer, also brought up the fact that, like, people, you know, just... in the general zeitgeist now really hate Airbnb for the one of the main reasons being Airbnbs are just way more expensive now. You get way more sticker shock from Airbnbs because they charge you this humongous cleaning fee on top of the booking fee and all of that. Sam, have you used Airbnb? Like, does this make you not want to use Airbnb?
I don't really think it affects me because most of the time, like, I'm traveling, it's like a lot of times, like, I use an Airbnb when I went to go to Google I.O. a few years back. And it goes like, because there aren't a ton of hotels in that area. And so Airbnbs actually make a lot more sense. You know, I'm going there and, like, all I want to do is have, like, good Wi-Fi and, like, a place to write and, you know, air conditioning to make sure it's not too hot. And it's like, that's really all I care about. And so, like, I'm not sure that, like, this really affects me in any way.
And you're not, like, a partier.
I mean, not as like a homeowner myself, like I understand it. Like, you don't want people to come in and mess up your place, and you, like, you just want people to be respectful. And I think, you know, I think that's the spirit of, you know, what they're trying to do. And I don't really have an issue with that. But you kind of brought up an interesting point where it's like, you know, with the rise of Ubers, like, a lot of people started hating on taxis. And it's like, and then when all this stuff happened with Uber, where, like, you know, they had a lot of issues with, you know, the pricing being kind of the surge pricing being really high, or just, like, a lot of the issues with, like, some drivers and some a customer is not getting along. If you really have this like dichotomy of like, you know, do you like the institutionalized taxi system? Do you like the institutionalized hotel system? Or you are more like free spirited where like, you know, you're going to go in someone else's car in an Uber, you're going to go stay in someone else's home in an Airbnb. And I think more recently, I felt like a lot of people are going back to the like, oh, I used to go to Airbnbs all the time, but like now I'm kind of like starting back to like, I prefer hotels again.
Right. I have never booked an Airbnb on my own, I don't believe. The only time I really want to consider Airbnbs is when I have like a larger group, like my family with multiple partners or multiple cousins and their partners and that sort of thing. Then I'm like, okay, a hotel might be nice, but it'd be even nicer if we could all be in the same big house. So that's where I go to like an Airbnb type instead of going straight to a hotel. And you're right. Like sometimes I feel icky going to like a hotel chain as opposed to like trying to, you know, support local businesses or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's tricky.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting because like I was trying to plan like a get together with like some of my high school friends. And so it's like, you know, three or four families plus like a bunch of kids. And so we needed like a big place with a lot of rooms and a lot of space. And like it's hard to find hotel rooms that accommodate 15 people. But like, you know, sometimes you can have a house that like, or, you know, two houses next to each other that can accommodate that many people. And I'll be interested to see like, you know, how do they distinguish that from like a party house where it's like, you know, if I have, you know, let's say like eight adults plus another eight kids, you know, there's a good chance that the kids might mess something up because they're
right, I was going
to
say
that's what kids do.
Yeah.
But like our intention is not to have a party. And so I'm curious to see if that is an impacts things at all.
Yeah, that's very interesting. If you're listening or you're tuning in and you have thoughts, or you're an Airbnb host and you have thoughts on Airbnb itself or anything else we've talked about today, make sure to send us an email at podcast@engadget.com. We love getting your mail. We'll talk about it on the show. So it's a fun time to interact with us. So let's move on to what we're working on. I know we're both still kind of putting finishing touches on our reviews, but Sam, what's up for you after Samsung?
After Samsung, I got a couple things I can't quite talk about. They might be foldable devices. Maybe kind of a hint without giving away or breaking any embargoes, IFA is coming up. So they're, you know, stay tuned for a lot more coverage on, you know, new announcements for IFA. And I think that's all I can say for now.
Yeah, I am more or less the same as you. I'm going to wrap up the Z Flip 4 and the Watch 5 and Watch 5 Pro reviews. And then I will be, you know, keeping an eye on IFA news. You and I have seen this mysterious other thing you were alluding to. And I'm out here living my best life trying to start a TikTok account.
And this is from multiple companies. Multiple companies are coming out with some foldable products very soon. So if you like the whole flexible screen trend, you know, stay tuned to Engadget for more.
In the meantime, what have you been watching or doing to relax, Sam?
Yeah, so I just started season 3 of The Boys, and I've really liked this show, you know, since the beginning. But like, I'm only one episode in, and just the pacing of this first episode is incredible. They go through so many things, and it's just like, it feels like, I don't know if like it's on Amazon Prime. I don't know what the rating system is for streaming services, but like this show is just like kind of nuts. And there's, I don't want to spoil anything, but like I was totally unprepared for everything that they launch into in the first, like just the first 15 minutes of the episode. And then they just like, they did a really great job of touching on all the different storylines from the previous season and like catching you up on them in a way that like was totally interesting and not boring at all. And also just like there's a definite shock and awe factor where it's just like there's like little snippets of like some of the side characters doing some things. It's like, oh okay. And then I was just not prepared for it. But I'm enjoying it so far. And I really like the fact that like they're really leaning into like the kind of, you know, subversion of your expectations. Because, you know, the whole series is founded on like, okay, what if superheroes were actually the bad guys, right? And then now they're just like the amount of layering they're doing for the satire and the parody of like what that kind of theme can do is just, I really appreciate the kind of all the levels and the depth that they're doing it with.
I see that on the image we've got on the screen and on the live stream right now, we've got Mr. Jensen Ackles in his The Boys debut. Jensen Ackles is what, like a new addition to the roster season 3. And Jensen Ackles, for those of you who don't know, it played Dean on Supernatural, long-running, very long-running TV series that me and Valentina Palladino, our senior commerce editor, both loved. We're very much Dean fans, and it's nice to see him in this. Have you seen Peacemaker yet, Sam? Have we talked about this?
I want to watch it, and that's been on the list, but I haven't had time to fit it in my schedule.
Because I get very similar vibes from Peacemaker to The Boys, except I know The Boys goes even more graphic and
yeah, I feel like The Boys is more gory, whereas like Peacemaker is, there's a little bit more whimsicalness to that show.
It gets graphic, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think the way they approach humor in those shows is like, very similar, but also there is some differences, I think.
I mean, I'll bet. Speaking of like kind of crazy shows, I watched Day Shift, the new Netflix movie starring Jamie Foxx, Dave Franco. It's basically about like these vampire hunters, but a very, very fresh take on vampire hunters. It's I've never seen before. Jamie Foxx is just like down and out. I think sort of separated from his wife guy that is just trying to keep his kid in the same state, that sort of thing. You know, the typical trope of that setup. And his main source of income is taking down vampires. And as goes the lore in this show, trading in their teeth or fangs for money. And then the movie is able to bring in some very like real life economic woes of like, oh, you have to pay your union dues. Oh, you got the processing fees. So like, you know, he thought he was going to make, for example, $1,000 and he ends up making only like 20 because half the fees up front for membership dues, early processing fee. I mean, like it's got great drama, great action, and then like good comedy because, you know, that writing is very fresh to me. I have to like clarify though up front, and you know, disclaimer, I haven't seen the full movie. Like I started watching it and then like I just had to like do more testing or whatever, so this week has been hard to find time to do anything like relaxing like that. So if it ends poorly, please do not blame me for my recommendation. All I think is it's been a very fast setup, a very fresh setup, very fun premise so far, so I suspect it's gonna be a good ending anyway, so go check it out. Well, that's it for the episode, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford on Twitter, and of course, as always, on Engadget.com.
If you want to share with me links of the wildest Airbnb listings, please share them with me on Twitter. I am at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts at podcast@Engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher.
The most Sherlyn thing I've ever heard in my life.